You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. Welcome to another episode of JX Reads. Today, with summer around the corner, we're taking a look at popular summer reads, books that are fun to take to the beach and other vacation destinations. And since June is Pride Month, we'll also talk about books that explore queer lifestyles and sexuality. Joining me on this exploration are my three guests. Kristen Anderson is the branch manager of the Ashland Public Library and Bear Creek area for the Jackson County Library Services. Welcome, Kristen.
Thanks. Good to be back.
And joining us all the way from Coos Bay is the director of the Coos Bay Public Library, Sammy Pearson. Welcome, Sammy.
Thank you.
And right here in Ashland, Megan Isser is owner of Bloomsbury Books. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you.
Now, the month of June is when we all start looking towards summer. School is out and many families start thinking about vacation destinations. So we'll talk about recommended summer reads, but that's a bit later. June is also Pride Month in recognition of those who identify as LGBTQ+. It's celebrated each year in commemoration of the 1969 Stonewall Uprising in Manhattan, which is widely regarded as a tipping point for the gay liberation movement in America. 1969 was a time when being gay in America was a crime. In 1999, June was officially designated by the federal government as a time to raise awareness. So we'll start by taking a look at books that explore the theme of queer lifestyles. But I want to ask a general question about the terminology. Is queer literature the correct characterization?
I mean, I think that that's how we've come to talk about it. I know that there are people in the LGBT plus community who aren't comfortable with the term queer because it has been periodically used as a slur, but it is fewer syllables.
But I know it's been a derogatory term. Yeah. So how has that shifted, or has it shifted? Is it used in the literary world?
Well, I think as it becomes more, the literature becomes more mainstream, I think that it's shedding some of that because it's now coming through as a positive thing to have these different stories told and instead of sort of buried and hidden.
Okay, so people are identifying themselves as queer openly and publicly?
Yes, definitely we've got authors who are letting us know their identity. I was thinking about it this morning, like, you know, we know Truman Capote was gay. We know Baldwin was gay, for example. But they weren't necessarily writing, their fiction doesn't necessarily reflect that as much, right? So then, and now what we see is rom-coms and body horror and all kinds of different things. You see romance described as sapphic, and if you're not like in the know, but sapphic is lesbian. That's so there's different terms that get thrown around that are like all subsets of queer.
Okay, so queer is the umbrella, and there's this whole span of literature that isn't just limited to one genre. It's across the spectrum.
Oh, correct. Yeah, you have everything from mysteries, adventures. I mean, all genres now, the crossover and have some reference, or not some reference, but are written with the queer characters in it. Straight, you know, like right there as upfront instead of maybe a off to the side character, but they're the star of the show.
Okay, well, speaking of the star of the show, Sammy, you have an example of history with the star of the show. I think Six Loves of James.
James the First, yes, James the First of England. He, was King of England in the 1600s, and it's a delightful book that talk about gossip filled for the royalty. Is even if you removed his relationships out of this book, it is a fascinating book of just intrigue and paranoid personalities, and then you throw in his relationships on top of that. You know, he was married to a woman but had many male lovers, and so he was fulfilling his duty as a monarch. He produced children, you know, like you're supposed to, and to carry on the family line. But at the same time, he would have, and using the quotation, hunting parties, where he would have his these men come along with him for it. They weren't hunting stag necessarily. They were hunting other things. So, but it's wonderful that there was this much evidence of it, and people knew about it at the time, too.
So this is biographical.
Yes, it's biographical, nonfiction, well-researched, lots of original source material. It's just a great book. It's a fun read.
Well, James the First lived when?
He was in the 1600s. He was born in, I knew you'd ask me this, and I've forgotten his birthday, but he was...
So he's in the
1600s.
And he's king of...
Of England and Scotland.
And Scotland.
Mm-hmm. And not Wales, but Wales was... Which is funny because one of his lovers was from Wales, and it was an interesting connection there, too.
Okay, so he's married to a woman.
Correct.
And she's what they proverbially call a beard.
Well, that's the funny part is that there's sort of a... unsure of whether he was bisexual, maybe, or was just using her, you know, like you said, as a cover. So there's still some debate over that. But there's no doubt that he had both sexes as his lovers.
Okay, so now the name of the book is Six Loves.
The Six Loves of James the First, yes.
Okay, so does it go into any discussion about who these people, these other
people were? Oh, certainly. In fact, one of them was the Lord Philip Herbert of Wales, and he's described as who is handsome as Adonis and as stupid as a tree stump, which I find hilarious. But at the same time, he was being used to infiltrate the court, essentially. People knew that James I had a fondness for men, and they would present men to him to try to get in favor. And this was one of those, this gentleman from Wales. And it worked.
So they're currying favor with the king by pimping out young
men. Essentially, yes. But it turned out that he really liked him and they liked each other. And I mean, while it was put forward as a political move, it ended up being a relationship.
How did his wife feel about that?
It doesn't go into a lot of her feelings on it. She knew, but yet she continued. She also had a royal duty, though. You have to keep that in mind, is these people had a lot of rules surrounding them. And so they had to play certain parts.
Okay.
And she played her part.
And so the subjects, the people of England, they were okay with that?
Well, I don't know about the people, but the royal court knew of it and in many ways used it to their advantage. So it was political moves.
Okay, well, my guests are librarians Kristen Anderson and Sammy Pearson, and the owner of Bloomsbury Books in Ashland, Megan Isser. Kristen,
yes.
You have a couple of titles that cover both historical fiction and nonfiction.
Yes. So I have been fascinated recently by, it started with a book called The Lilac People, which is written by a man named Milo Todd, and he wrote this book about 1930s Berlin. And theater is something that I care about. So I think of cabaret. Like, I think cabaret is what people think about when they think about that era in terms of queer experience, right? And so the main character is a trans man. And while it was illegal for a woman to dress as a man at that time, there was this dude named Magnus Hirschfeld who had a center that would give that could issue licenses for you to dress as a gender other than the one that you were, right? So the main character in this is a licensed trans, they would have called them transsexuals at the time. And
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
There's a guy who had a center that gave you authorization to dress as a different gender than.
It kind of had the ability to override the laws, and it was like recognized as a thing that you could do. Like that was so. I think it's interesting. We think about the context of the laws and the climate we have today, and it's interesting. Like gayness and queerness have existed like for centuries,
right?
In different ways, and the way that they were treated was different. But we don't necessarily have the context for that always because none of us were alive in 1930s Berlin, and this was a norm. Like this, like it sounds weird to us, but it was super normal in that world. Just like James having male lovers on the side was.
It was just a thing.
It was just a thing. Yeah. It was just the way it was.
Okay, so this is in Nazi Germany.
Yes, Yes. And so and keep in mind that in that era, people would have people who were gay were also put in the concentration camps, right? So the main character in this novel, who is a trans man and works for Magnus Hirschfeld, knows that they're getting rounded up and escapes with his partner, and they hide out for the entirety of the war. And as the war's wrapping up and the camps are being liberated, a person shows up on their property who is also visibly a trans man. And they are put in a dangerous position of figuring out how to protect him, because for the Jews, liberation from the concentration camp meant freedom. For people who were gay, they were seen as committing crimes, so they didn't have freedom as an option when they were getting out of the camps. There were other options, so it wasn't necessarily safe for you to exist in the world outside, like once you got liberated from the camps, if that makes sense.
Okay, so they were jumping out of a frying pan into...
Correct. Right. Correct. So this is like their escape story, which is a trauma narrative, which isn't always like, because we've got all sorts of, like when we get into Beach Reads, we're going to talk about positive stories about that are affirming and people just living their lives and being happy. But this is like an interesting, because Magnus Hirschfeld's center got burnt to the ground under Nazi Germany, all of his history... all of the history he recorded, he was doing early gender-affirming surgery, things like that. All of those records got burnt. And we didn't have computers, so we don't have the history anymore.
Okay, and how did they define what a trans man was?
So a trans man is someone who was assigned female at birth but made the decision, or was that's not how you would say it, but used, presented as a man in public.
Gotcha. So you also have another book called The Einstein of Sex.
Right. And that is the nonfiction counterpart to Lilac People. That is about Magnus Hirschfeld, who is Jewish and gay and ran the center that was really, he was a sexologist. So Dr. Ruth Westheimer, that kind of a person, but in 1930s Berlin, and he was doing early kind of early studying of this idea that there's a spectrum of sexuality and a spectrum of gender, and that's he was researching all of that stuff in the 1930s.
Okay, so he was breaking the whole ideology around binary genders back in 1930s.
Yep. But all of his work got lost because the Nazis burned it down.
Gotcha.
Which, what a shame. Oh.
Right, right.
What a shame to lose all that. I mean.
And I think that's the important part about pride is like recognizing that these things are lost would be lost if we weren't going back and trying to recreate them. Right. And that folks who are queer have existed for centuries.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's not new, but... ability to exist publicly in the world is newer, right. I guess.
So The Lilac People is authored by who?
Milo Todd.
And The Einstein of Sex is authored by?
You are about to make me pull this name out of my hat that I have completely forgotten. It is Daniel Brook.
Okay. So, Megan.
Yeah.
You have an example of an uplifting book that touches on the pride theme.
Yeah, so I mean, touching on pride theme / a summer read, which for me, I don't know if we're heading into summer read topics now, but summer for me is a mixed bag. You know, it's my kids' schedules are all off, and it requires a color-coded spreadsheet, and the heat is triggering for me because it's just, you know, fire season. And so I'm not the type of person who just wants to, like, relax and lay on a beach. I'm a little bit, you know, on edge when it comes to summertime. So I need a book that really just lands me into, you know, a nice steady rhythm. And that's Ann Patchett. I mean, she is like the quintessential storyteller with this beat to her writing that just settles me. So Whistler is the book that I wanted to talk about.
And we're going to do that right after we take this break. Perfect. But we do have to take a short break. Welcome back to JX Reads on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. During this Pride Month, we're looking at books that explore queer lifestyle. And with the summer around the corner, we're looking at books you might want to carry with you to the beach or wherever else you relax on vacation. One of those books might be The Whistler.
Yeah, so I chose Whistler for this topic. It does have a pride theme in it that, you know, talks about just the consequences of closeted sexuality and what those secrets can do to a person's choices in life and family. But really, for me, it's a summer read because Ann Patchett, who apparently wrote this book while walking on a treadmill, like a treadmill desk, which, you know, adds to just the rhythmic of her, the soothing rhythm of her writing that I need for summertime when I'm a little bit more on edge with the lack of schedules and heat and fire season. But it's a book about this couple who visits the Met one morning, and they notice this older man is following them. And it turns out this older man has a very big impact on this woman's childhood. And I don't want to give too much away, but it's a story that goes back in time to a very intense event in this woman's life as she rekindles a relationship with this person in her current life. And just to understand how the choices that were made for her as a child, the choices that other adults made around her impacted her life, and the vagueness of memory and different people's perceptions on their past. I could not put it down, but I didn't want it to end. You know, it's that feeling of like, oh, I want this. I want to know what happens, but I can't stop. But I don't want this to end. It's one of those books.
It sounds like it has a lot of interesting characters.
Yes, interesting characters, but also so much heart. And that's what I need in the summertime, is just that reminder that kindness and goodness is everywhere. And it just, with all of the intensity of the memories that happen in this book, the kindness and love is what just puts my nerves at ease.
And that's what people need when they're on vacation.
Yes, or just in life, in always, life. Every season.
Sammy, you've got some recommendations.
Well, if we're talking, if we're still on queer and beach reads, is it Tuxedo? Oh, now I've forgotten the title.
Tuxedo Society.
Tuxedo, yeah. Society. There we are. I wanted to say game, but I knew that wasn't right. A little bit of spicy romance going on. Accidentally becoming a spy happens. Just a fun read and a fast read that is perfect for relaxing and just kicking back.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that sort of a spy thriller?
Well, yeah. He's an actor who accidentally becomes a spy, along with, you know, you get all the cool spy gadgets and that kind of thing. So it's a whole new world for him in that. And then he gets the spicy romance going, and it's just delightful.
Okay, now when we're talking spicy romance, we're not back into the queer literature, are we?
Yes.
Oh, we are.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, spicy can be anything.
Spicy can be any, but this one is a gay spicy romance.
Right. So spicy would be a little bit more graphic in its depiction of what's going on in the bedroom. And there's a whole range of spice when it comes to any kind of romance.
Right. This is maybe a couple chili peppers, not just one.
Okay. Now you have another book, Flatshare.
Flatshare. Oh, Emily Henry. I love her books. And they're just, that one's so delightful. I don't want to give too much away, but it's two people who share an apartment, but one is there at night and one's there during the day because they work opposite, you know, work shifts. And it starts with simple notes and it proceeds from there. And it just is a book you walk away going, oh, that was so nice.
Whenever we have a customer who wants a book that's light but fun, it's always Emily Henry.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I've never been disappointed in her books.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I also have some recommendations about cats.
There's sort of this new, new, I guess, to our library of these cat Japanese writers, and they write about these cat series. And they're just, once again, those books that just leave you feeling good. They're easy reads, perfect for summertime. They're not demanding of you, but they just have a real light, And who doesn't like a good cat story?
Well, I have a title here. We'll prescribe you a cat series.
Yes. And there's we'll prescribe you a cat. And then the next one is we'll prescribe you another cat. And it just goes on. And it's just, I don't know. I just find them sweet and, like I said, just light and easy to read. And they just take, they're one you sit down, like you were talking about, the Badger book. You sit down and you just read it. And then you wake up and you're, or you look up and you're like, oh, well, there's the afternoon gone. So.
Well, not every summer read is going to be light and fluffy. No. Sometimes they can be really intriguing and
yes,
deep,
right,
like Yesteryear.
Oh,
yes,
that book.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, oh, what a ping pong book that is. That's the only way I can think to describe it is ping pong, back and forth. And I know personally for me, lots of eye rolling, mm-hmm, lots of me yelling at the main character, lots of.
She's intentionally unlikable.
Oh, she's so unlikable. She's such an unreliable narrator. But that's what makes it so good.
So unpredictable. Yes. I had no idea where this book was going.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I can't ever imagine where it ends up.
And it's got a hook, and it's going to be, I think it's going to be one of those ones that's going to be talked about. This, I mean, it's going to be the book, a book of the summer. It's already been optioned as a movie, mm-hmm, and Hathaway is going to be the the main character.
Right. And she's producing. Who's the author?
Caro.
Three names.
I want to say Burroughs? Not
Burke. It's Caro something Burke. It's, sorry, we should have that in front of us. she's, it's her first novel, which is why we haven't quite.
Right.
But, Caro Claire Burke.
Thank you. Go. I had most of it. I just missed the middle name.
Yeah.
And so the main character is a trad wife influencer. We need to break that down.
Yes.
So sorry. So somebody who is on social media glamorizing lifestyles of the historic past, like
a traditional
off the grid, you know, living off the land, and it's a trend right now. But yet they look so beautiful and perfect, mm-hmm, and showered, and it's like, how do you do that? Well, she pulls the veil.
Right.
What's really going on?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's why I describe it as a ping pong book, because at first I thought roller coaster, but no, it doesn't go up and down. It ricochets back and forth,
mm-hmm, yeah,
in almost this manic way of trying to present herself as this, oh, I'm a perfect, look at me, how curated I am, to what's really happening behind the scenes. And you're like, whoa, okay.
Yeah.
And then it goes back and forth.
And then complicated by juxtaposing that against the story of she wakes up and she finds herself in
truly in the
1800s. And what's really going on there, mm-hmm, is like a plot point that would be a spoiler.
Right.
So we're not going to talk about that, but that is part of the story.
But
okay,
the fun,
that's why it's called Yesteryear.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But it's just a fun mental exercise. What if these trad wives that are on social media were actually put in the space and time that they're trying to pretend that they're in? And I don't think they are equipped.
Yeah.
And she proves it.
Yeah. So it's kind of dark. I mean, it's billed as dark satire. It's just got a crazy, cool hook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds fun. I now want to read it. My guests are librarians Kristen Anderson and Sammy Pearson, and the owner of Bloomsbury Books in Ashland, Megan Isser. Now, Kristen, you had another recommended title, Calamity Club?
Ah, yeah. So Calamity Club is the, like, it's been a while. Catherine Stockett wrote The Help, and Calamity Club is, like, 15 years in the making. Like, it's been 15 years since she wrote a novel, and some of it is because of some of the blowback about Help centering a white character when it's really about black maid characters. This is a different book. Calamity Club is set in 1930s? It's set in 1930s Mississippi, and it deals with eugenics and prostitution and all of these interesting, I don't know, it's kind of like risky business but historical style. So it's a fun read. Have either of you?
I haven't read it, but now I want to.
Yeah. I'm shocked how long it is, but I guess it took 15 years.
It is I listened to it. It's 29 hours.
Oh,
whoa,
my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a commitment.
That's a hefty book.
Yeah.
It's a calamity.
Yeah, it is. But and like there's almost, it's almost like, it feels like it's almost in two distinct parts that could have been published separately, but it's squished together into one novel. But the there's an orphan character who's looking for her mom, and there's a main character who's kind of, I don't know, trying to figure herself out, but helping her sister out, and all of these interesting characters come together and have a, I don't know, I don't want to ruin it because you kind of do have to read it and go through the process.
Well, she is good at writing characters, it's
character driven. It's the characters that
it's exciting to have her back.
Yes. And I think it was really hard for her because of the blowback from The Help. Mm-hmm. I think some of the narrative is how hard it is after that to come back and write a second novel.
Oh, and I think she got dropped by her publisher from it. And now she's with there was some political drama happening too.
Well,
she must be quite a writer to make a story around eugenics in 1930s Mississippi.
Pull
you into it.
That's a tale to tell, right?
And it's the idea that women who have children but who don't have a man in their lives must be inherently bad, and it deals with kind of this the children of those relationships then being kind of marginalized, as well as women being there's forced sterilization is a part of the narrative in prison for prostitution and those sorts of things.
Word, that's pretty heavy.
So maybe not the lightest summer
it's
read.
Not the
lightest book,
a lot of humor in it, and there's some very sassy kind of count. Like there's these characters that are just truly themselves, you know, and I think that is part of what made The Help, in spite of its flaws, something that people connected with.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it sounds like quite a novel. Now, on the flip side of that, we have nonfiction. Megan, you have...
Right. I recommend London Falling, A Mysterious Death in a Gilded City and a Family Search for Truth by Patrick Radden Keefe. And if you want a thriller, a real-life thriller, this book is incredible. And Patrick Radden Keefe is such a thorough investigative journalist. I wish I could hire him for my own family to find out like the secrets that have gone on, because he has just uncovered this very twisted underground society in London that has affected a family's son and the disappearance of their son. And it taps into just being a parent and discovering things about your children that are going on that are frightening. But it's also taps into Russian oligarchy in London, and it's gripping.
So it's all over the place.
It's all over the place, but it does not lose your attention.
What do you take away from that book?
Well, what I take away is, you know, as a parent, I think it's hard to know what your kids are up to, and this is the worst case scenario, but you just don't know, and really staying in tune with what your kids are doing. it's a cautionary tale in that way, but it's also London isn't what it seems. You know, their kid's son isn't what it seems, but neither is London. There's a lot of underground shadiness that goes on that it has to do with the mob and money, and, you know, nothing is what it seems.
Well, that's every society we live in.
Yeah.
Right.
Nothing
is
what it seems.
Right.
Right. That sounds like, current nonfiction is so great because it reads amazing anymore. You know, you don't, it's not the stuffy of.
Right. You can't make this stuff up. And I think what's going on just in society, it's showing that nonfiction is at its own level of drama that we can't even compete with sometimes in fiction.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're heading into the summer reads, vacation, and we've got a lot of recommendations here. Mm-hmm. Everything from queer lifestyles to 1930s Germany, Nazi Germany, to 1930s Mississippi, to London, and to Japanese cats.
Mm-hmm. Well, it just shows you can have your light summer reads, or you can have your wow summer reads that you just spend all summer reading.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. That's all the time we have. Thank you all for your recommendations.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.